Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Muskies Matters with Lakeland University head football coach Colin Bruton. Muskies Matters is a program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Muskies coach questions about the team, football or sports in general, or just seek the coach's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this episode, the coach discusses with us his thoughts on the Super Bowl. He tells us how recruiting is going, and the coach calls out a really stupid guy for what he did wrong. So let's get right to Muskies Matters.
Let's welcome back Coach Bruton this week. Coach, do you have any team updates you'd like to provide for us?
It's recruiting season right now for us, so we're hitting it hard with recruiting and starting to see some guys commit, and just kind of an exciting time. You know, the signing day for the scholarship schools, the Division I and Division II schools, is Wednesday of next week, so that's kind of a time when guys are trying to make decisions. A lot of guys want to decide where they're going before Wednesday, and a lot of Division III athletes now want to be involved in that signing. Even though they're not signing a national letter of intent, they want to be involved. So you know, this next 5 or 6 days is a big period for us in recruiting, and so that's going well for us. And then our guys are back and really been working hard. You know, we're about 2 weeks into off-season workouts, and our guys have been really working hard and really committing, and we're excited about where we're at with kind of the guys we get coming back. So it's an exciting time. You know, it's cold up here, so that's the one issue. We got a lot of guys from down south, and they're wondering how they're going to survive this. I think it was -1 this morning. But outside of that, you know, life is good up here at Lakeland.
I know you're probably not able to say specific players by name, but are there recruits that you have in that you feel like can make a big impact for next season right off the bat?
Yeah, I think there definitely is. You know, I think, we got some holes still. We feel like we're bringing back a good group, but we still got some holes, and I think we got a couple offensive linemen we're really excited about, a couple guys in the secondary we're really excited about, and there's some guys that we think can be really special players for us. We're at the point now that I don't anticipate us playing a ton of freshmen next year, at least probably not in starting roles, but guys that can contribute on special teams and things like that. But we're gonna invite competition and want guys to come in and ready to compete, and we're excited. It's been, I think, every year I've been the head coach now, this is going into my fourth year, and I feel like our recruiting classes have gotten better every year. There's just the overall talent level, and we've kind of raised our talent floor, if you will, and that's an exciting thing.
At this point, what is the team schedule, and what does your schedule look like?
Yeah, so our guys are lifting 3 days a week, so they're in the weight room for about an hour and a half between our agility portion of our workouts and then obviously the weight room portion. So they do that on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. That allows them a ton of time for recovery and rest and that kind of stuff. And a lot of our guys are working. They got part-time jobs, so working on campus, so working off campus. The other obligation with us is they have some study table hours and things like that. So they're coming in and getting kind of their studying in and checking in with us and just making sure that we're monitoring their academic progress and things like that. So that's been a good thing for us, and I think that structure in the second semester really helps our guys. You know, you're used to having a structure where you're at practice 5 days a week, and now they come back and they have, maybe one or two classes, and then they got 10 or 12 hours of free time during the day. And that can be a scary thing for a lot of guys because you can waste a lot of time. So trying to keep them in that structure with studying and with workouts has been really good. And then as coaches, it kind of varies. You know, there's days that, a day like today, we got some recruits coming in at 10 o'clock, so in about 50 minutes here, and we'll have four recruits that we'll have on campus and kind of showing them around and kind of going through the recruiting day with them, and that'll keep us busy. And there's other days where, we're not quite as structured with what we have going on, and we have a little bit more freedom to work on things. We're working on off-season projects and just different ideas to kind of help improve the program and things like that. So it's really day-to-day, and then throughout the day we have players coming in that want to talk or just want to hang out, and they're here, and we want that. We want our guys to be around us. We want our guys to feel comfortable coming in the offices, and they're in and out all day, so that kind of changes your schedule day-to-day as well.
Maybe it's just because your office is warmer than any place else.
It could be, yeah, it could be. We have heat in here, so it's good.
Before we head into fan questions, a lot of people wrote in and wanted your thoughts on the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think you got two pretty good teams. I think Philadelphia's been a little bit underrated all year. I thought before Wentz got hurt in the middle of the year, they were probably playing the best football. So I think they've been a little bit underrated the whole year. I thought being a number one seed in the home team, they didn't get quite as much respect as they should have gotten throughout the NFC playoffs. And up where you're at, in Viking country there, people probably aren't real pumped about the Eagles. But You know, I think the key is going to be if they can get pressure with their front four on Brady. If they can, I really think the Eagles have a really good shot to win the game. But it's hard to you know, bet against Brady and Belichick, and they've been there so often, and it seems like they just signed away. You know, and they're so multiple, and they can beat you in so many different ways. And but yeah, you know, if you're asking me to make a pick, I think I'm leaning towards the Eagles. I just for some reason I think they're. They got the right group this year, and I think they're going to be able to get pressure with their front four, and I think they'll harass Brady a little bit. And you know, if you've seen the games they've lost in the Super Bowl to the Giants in the past, it's really because Brady wasn't comfortable in the pocket, and they were able to get pressure with their front four. And I see a really similar potential matchup with the Eagles this year. So I'm leaning the Eagles, but I think it'll be a really good game.
Well, let's head into fan questions. First of all, Adam would like to know, do you see the offense undergoing any kind of dramatic change in philosophy because of Michael Whitley graduating?
You know, I don't know if dramatic is the word I would use. You know, I think we will be different. You know, we'll be different without him. And it really depends who that guy is, you know, behind center. You know, the thing about Michael that made him so special is he was a dual threat guy, you know, so he could beat you with your feet. He obviously could beat teams with his arm, and he was so smart, you know, and allowed us to really be very multiple and really get more complex the older he got in the system and just make those adjustments, kind of more the in-game adjustments that Michael was able to make because he could see things. And now playing a quarterback that'll likely be, you know, much more inexperienced, that might be a little bit harder for us. We've talked, you know, even if Michael was coming back, we've talked about trying to be a little bit more sophisticated in the run game. You know, last year we ran primarily one run play, you know, the entire year, and was very effective running the ball. But when we got to that playoff level against Oshkosh, we realized that we had to be a little more multiple in the run game. So I think that's something you're going to see from our offense is just a little bit more diversity in the run game. And then we'll see. You know, it depends year to year with personnel and kind of seeing you know, what's the right personnel for us, and you know, where can we be our best with the guys that we have? And it's not just Michael. We lost three really good receivers and lost two guys up front. So it's a combination. You know, losing six starters on offense is tough, and obviously a record-setting offense like we had. So we're going to be a little bit different. I don't know if I would use the word drastic, though. I think our basic principles are going to stay the same.
Ian would like to know, do you think it is important to spend some time to just let your body recuperate after football season?
Yeah, I think yes. It's such a grind, you know, it's such a grind for our guys and just a physical toll. And part of it is not just a physical toll, it's a mental toll. You know, so we tell our guys, you know, when the season ends, you know, our season ended right before Thanksgiving and kind of from Thanksgiving to Christmas, we put them on their own. We don't give them a workout plan. We don't see them in the weight room or anything like that. We're on the road recruiting at that time, and the guys are really on their own. Some guys will come in and get kind of what I would call maintenance lifts. So they want to get in and just kind of work out some soreness and kind of get back into the habit of working out. And then we'll give our guys a program for when they leave, you know, kind of the end of December, kind of before Christmas until we got back. So we had about a five-week break this year. So guys had a five-week program in the off season. You know, we hope that our guys are following that thing religiously. We understand or realize, if we're being realistic, over the holidays, our guys probably aren't getting in the weight room as much as we want them to get in the weight room. And then they came back, and we started school again January 22nd, and on January 22nd, we were back in the weight room. So, you know, they had, you know, from the time our season ended until January 22nd, almost two full months to let their body recuperate. They should have been lifting some of that time, but I think it's important. You can't just rush right from one you know, from football right back into the weight room. Now, I do think it's good if you're talking about high school athletes to play multiple sports, and it's something that we support and would want kids to do. I think the thing that you see there is you're using different muscle groups, and it's a little different level of physicality if you're going from, say, a football to a basketball or something like that. So I think that can be good, but I think there's also some value to just letting the body rest and recover, and a lot of it's just mentally kind of get yourself right.
Phil would like to know what you think makes a Hall of Fame football player.
Well, I think first and foremost, you got to be a talented. You know, you got to be talented. You got to be able to do the things. You got to be able to do the things on the field that other guys can't do. And that's, you know, some of that is God-given talent. Some of it is your ability to kind of build those skills that make you effective at your position. I think beyond that, then, you know, I think it's just what separates kind of the really good players from the great players is just their dedication, their commitment to things. You know, their ability to go above and beyond kind of what their opponents are doing. And I think that's a big part of it. And I think the last part of it, I think when you talk about a Hall of Fame football player, some of it I think is fit and some of it is just kind of the structure they get put in. I think you see some guys that have great careers, you know, and some of it is because they went to the right team, and it was luck. They got drafted by the right team at the right time, in the right system that fit what they were going to do. And I think you probably see it in reverse, where guys who probably had Hall of Fame talent end up in the wrong situation, and they end up not having quite as good a career, you know, because they just went to the wrong team. So I think part of it is a little bit of luck.
What are your thoughts on a guy who has talent, has numbers, like a Terrell Owens, but yep. seemed to be such a distraction off the field? Is that something that should count against him?
Yeah, I think it should. You know, I think Terrell Owens, though, was such an extraordinary talent and was such a game-changing player. I think he's a Hall of Famer, but I do think the off-the-field stuff should play into it. I should think it should be part of the equation. I just don't think it can be the total equation. You know, you look at his numbers, and you know, he's second all-time in a lot of receiving categories, or third all-time, and you know, he really, you know, for a stretch there was probably the best receiver, or, you know, one of the top two or three receivers in the NFL for probably a 6 to 8 year period. And I think he's a Hall of Famer. I agree with the idea that, you know, the distractions he brought off the field hurts his candidacy, but I don't think it should hurt it enough that he shouldn't be a Hall of Famer.
Dennis would like to know, he says, why does the Peyton Manning make it big and a Ryan Leaf doesn't? I have never understood how two guys with all the tools and talent in the world can have two totally different careers when injuries are not an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think that comes back just to personality, and I think with Leaf, it was, you know, he wasn't ready or mature enough to handle that stage, wasn't mature enough for to handle kind of the pressure of being the guy, and it ultimately, you know, it wasn't a physical thing with him, it was a mental thing, it was an emotional thing, and he just didn't have the stability that he needed to, you know, to make it at that level. And it's a shame because, you know, it seems like he's a guy that's finally now got his life on track and is doing things the right way, you know, but you wonder what would have happened if he would have been in the right frame of mind when he got drafted. You know, I look at like a Johnny Manziel, more recent example, and it's a similar situation. You know, he just didn't have the maturity needed to play at that level and to play that position at that level. You know, you might be able to get away with being that guy if you were a defensive lineman or you were playing a different position where the spotlight wasn't on you. But you know, those guys, you know, while Manziel didn't have all the physical tools of a Ryan Leaf, you know, they're players that didn't have the maturity and the emotional stability to handle the pressure and being in that position. It's a shame, you know, but that's part of it. It's you know, when you're evaluating these guys, I think in the draft, you're looking at guys who can handle the spotlight, handle all the off the field stuff that goes on with it, you know. For some of these guys, it's as simple as it's the first time in their life they've ever had money, and being able to handle that responsibility and handle that, handle that level of ability to do other things off the field is a big deal. Some of these guys, I think, just make bad decisions because they don't know how to respond or how to act when they have that type of financial freedom. So it's just different, and a lot of it's just mentality. You know, Peyton Manning was lucky that he had a father that played in the NFL, and you know, he had that support structure that you know, Ryan Leaf probably didn't have.
Barry would like to know, he says, what is with the Browns fans celebrating with a parade for going 0-16? To me, that sounds like Germany going out and celebrating losing World War II.
Well, Barry took it to a whole nother level there. I don't know if I can compare a winless football season to losing a World War, but yeah, I think Browns fans are just at the point now. It's, you know, you've been so bad. To me, you're better off going 0-16 than going 2-14. You know, you might as well at least have some novelty to it and be able to make a joke out of going 0-16. So I don't know what that franchise is doing. But I guess if you're a Browns fan, if you can go out and have some fun, and I'm sure if you're in Cleveland, you're probably drinking a few beers and going out and having a parade. Why not? You know, you don't have anything else to celebrate. You might as well, find a reason to have some fun in Cleveland. So. It's, you know, their franchise is just a mess, and it doesn't matter who they bring in, and they have a coach, I think, that's 1-31, and they're bringing him around for a third year. So I mean that should tell you everything you need to know about that franchise.
Nick says, when are Europeans going to realize that in America we play football and they play soccer?
We probably should let them know. I don't know if that's part of Trump's America's First agenda or what's going on, but we probably should make that a big point emphasis, that let them know that, that's not football Americana. We play football and they play soccer. So hopefully they know. Hopefully they'll realize it soon. But, I'm not sure. Maybe we got to go start a third world war or something. I'm not sure.
Gosh, we'd like to know, are you a little deflated because the White Sox haven't really made any moves to improve this season?
You know, I like where the White Sox are at. I saw something maybe a week ago, they have seven of the top 100 prospects in baseball. So I think they're doing things the right way. You know, as a White Sox fan for my whole life, there's been many years where they've kind of rushed this rebuild, and you know, they had a stretch in the mid 2000s where they were pretty good and won a World Series. But I think they had to really, you know, just really rebuild this thing. And I like where they're going. I think getting the young talent they got last year with all the trades they made and stuff, I think they're positioning themselves. I think they're probably a year away before they want to really add talent. And when they do, I think they got a chance to be pretty good. I think as a baseball fan in Chicago, you're looking at like 2018, 2019, 2020. It could be really exciting because I think you're going to have, probably for the first time in many people's lifetimes, you're going to have two really good baseball teams in Chicago.
Tom would like to know, he says, everyone acts like America is falling apart. Do you think it is really that bad?
You know, I think, Tom, I think you got to look at it in two ways. I think in the sense of where we're at, with partisan politics, it's probably as bad as it's ever been. You know, I think there's just no ability for our members of Congress and really for a lot of just the citizens to be able to talk rationally and to be able to negotiate and be able to really govern in a way that makes sense. But I don't also know that I would say that America's falling apart. I think we still have a great structure here, and we still have a lot of great people, and we still have a country we should be proud of. But I also look and say that, you know, for probably most of us in our lifetime, this is potentially, you know, the lowest we've felt about our government and the way things are working in America. So I think it's a little bit of both. You know, I think we got to try to look to the future and say, how can we bring people together? And you know, I don't know if there's an easy answer to that. And it seems like it's becoming more divisive kind of by the day or by the week. So it's, you know, it's not a great situation, but it's, you know, it's something that I think we have to keep in perspective too. We also have it pretty good here in America.
Jenny would like to know, she says, I find it fascinating that you and the other coaches will sit around the office making lists of stuff. How did that start?
Yeah, I don't know. We got a pretty interesting group of coaches here and a lot of personalities, and we got some guys that are pretty intelligent in the office. So I don't know if there was really a reason, you know, how it started, but it's a good time. We've often said we should have a sitcom. They have the old Coach TV show, and it probably wouldn't make it on network TV, but I think it could be a pretty good, pretty entertaining show for people to come in and just see our coaches on a day-to-day basis, just see some of the conversations that we have and where things go. So, yeah, you know, I think there's a ton of inside jokes and a ton of stuff, you know, that people wouldn't understand, but I think it'd be pretty entertaining.
You guys could have your own reality show, maybe.
We could, yeah. We got to find a network that wants to wants to promote a Division III school in Wisconsin for a reality show, but I think it could be a huge hit.
Jeremy asks, if you could meet any famous figure from the past, who would that be, and what would you ask him or her?
Whew. Oh man, that's a tough one. The first name that comes to mind, probably Jesus, for I think obvious reasons. And I think I'd probably ask him, you know, a ton of different things. I think that would be one. Yeah, I'm not sure beyond that. You know, I'm interested in history, so some of the presidents and those guys, I think I'd be interested in. I think those would probably be the ones that I would start with. But if I had to name one, I'd probably go Jesus.
Tyler asks, he says, it seems that there are very few leaders in Washington that can be admired today. Who are people that you wish your children would look up to?
I hope me. I hope as a father that I'm someone they look up to. You know, I hope their teachers are people they feel like they can look up to, their coaches, you know, as they're playing sports, hope they're people that they can look up to. I hope the players in my program, you know, my two boys are around our program a lot, and they're out of practice and they're at games, and you know, they really admire our players, and I hope that our players are doing things that, you know, I hope they're doing things that they feel like they can admire, and hope our players are guys that my kids want to grow up to be like, you know, not just on the field but off the field. You know, I think that's one of the, you know, going back to the original question, I think it's the original thought. I think that's one of the issues in Washington. You know, these guys are, they should be representatives of us, and they should be regular people that are, you know, fulfilling the wants and needs of the people in their districts. And that's not what you're seeing. And, you know, I think you, as a president, we should have a president that is looking to be a servant leader, and I don't think that's what we're seeing. So I think if we can get back to that in Washington, we're going to be in better shape. You know, guys and ladies that just want to represent their district and understand that they're just regular people just like us that are doing a job for the country. So, you know, hopefully that changes. But I think there's a lot of other people. I don't think you need to be famous for a child to look up to. I think there's, you know, like I said, teachers and coaches and people like that our kids should look up to and see that these people are doing great things and really sacrificing for them and for their greater good. I think those would be great role models.
Jack asks, he says, Coach, there are some songs out there that I absolutely hate to hear at games. Like, how much more of Sweet Caroline can we listen to? What are five songs that you wish would stop playing at games?
Yeah, I don't know if I have a huge list on this one. I think there's nothing that like middle-aged white people love more than Sweet Caroline playing at a game. So I don't know if that's ever going to change. You know, it's hard not to sing along to Sweet Caroline when it comes on. So I don't know if that's going to change. I don't know if that really bothers me. You know, I think there's kind of some just tradition that goes in when you go to a game. And you know, the one thing I'll say is that there's a ton of market research that goes into this thing. It's not like they have a guy just playing music. You know, they go in and they monitor which songs get people to sing along and stand up and dance and that kind of stuff. And they've got to figure it out. And, you know, if that song is Sweet Caroline, I don't know if we can stop arenas from playing it. So I don't know if I have a huge list. I don't know if this is an issue that me and Jack see eye to eye on. So I don't know if I can give you one, but I think Sweet Caroline may get a little bit too much abuse.
I could do with a lot less YMCA, personally.
But yeah, I will give you that one. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Gary would like to know, he says, I never understood why people watch these stupid award shows like the Grammys and Oscars. Why do these shows matter?
They don't. I think it's just, we're such a celebrity-obsessed culture that I think the ability to see celebrities and see what they're wearing, and you know, we're obsessed with that as Americans, and it's kind of sad. I'm not a big fan of the Grammys, the Oscars. You know, I know the Grammys were on a couple weeks ago. I didn't know half the musical acts that were getting awards or up for awards, and I don't know what the obsession is outside of the fact that I think we're really really just celebrity obsessed, and we want to see these people, and any chance we get to see these people, we're excited about. The other thing I'd say is that I think anytime there's awards, there's a winner and a loser. I think we get into that kind of stuff. So I think it's one of the reasons that we love sports, is that there's a clear winner and loser. And I think with these award shows, it's the same way. There's, you know, they're going to read off an award, and there's a clear winner and a clear loser. And I think we like that as well. So I'd say probably those two reasons, but I don't get it either. I just don't think they're very entertaining shows. So people say the same thing. If they were a little bit more outspoken, I'd probably be a little bit more excited about watching them.
Beverly asks, she says, Coach, you told us on the show once that you were surprised you got Christmas presents because you thought there was no way you would ever wind up on the nice list. So were you on the nice list this last Christmas?
I was. We had a great Christmas. Had a great Christmas. Got to see both sides of our family, and you know, got some good stuff, some good presents, and yeah, it was good. I can't complain about Christmas. Our kids had a great Christmas and got really really well taken care of by our family members, and you know, they're pretty spoiled, so they were excited. But yeah, I made it on the nice list again this year. I think maybe the standards are changing or something like that, and we're allowing more on the nice list. I'm not sure, but yeah, I've been safe for I think 36 years in a row. I've made it on the nice list, so I feel pretty good about my chances now.
Jeannie would like to know, she says, it seems like every guy has a whopper of a story that they have learned to embellish over the years so that the story is almost bigger than life. Do you have a whopper like that?
No, I really don't. I will say this. I've probably told the it's not even a whopper of a story. It's a bold-faced lie that I was a state dance champ in 1993. So, you know, people will make fun of me about my dancing ability, and I'll tell them that I was a state dance champ, that I did dance. I was in a dance troupe growing up because it was good for flexibility and coordination for sports, and that I was a dance champ in 1993. We went to a competition in Springfield, Illinois, and we won in the jazz funk division. And people for many years, you know, the amount of people I've gotten to believe that story over the years is really, really impressive. I think the amount of details and the amount of times I've told it, with the details, you know, I can tell it pretty well. So that's probably my one story. I got some people that still laugh about it or still will bring up that I was a state dance champ. So I can't even say it's an embellished story because it's literally just a lie. But it's worked out pretty well for me over the years.
What were you, like 10 then? 10 or 11?
I was in 12, yeah. It was U-12 division. So 1993, I was U-12 division in my dance troupe.
Mark would like to know, he says, so my wife says to me, I think I'm getting too fat. What do you think? And I said, you look good, but you could afford to lose a few pounds. And now she is upset at me. I don't get women. Can you explain them to me?
Well, first of all, Mark, you're an idiot. I hate to say it like that, but come on. This isn't that difficult a one. No one understands women. If we understood women, I wouldn't be a football coach. I'd be, you know, making billions of dollars selling books or something like that, or speaking or doing something. None of us understand women. So that's the first part of it. But the second part of this is about as easy a situation as you can get as a man. She asked this question, and there's no but. It's, you look good, you look great, you look wonderful. How would you ever say that? Why would you ever think that? There can't be a but in there. So, I mean, Mark, you got to be better than this. This is how it starts, because now Mark's wife is going to go tell her friends, and they're going to get on their husbands about Mark, and just creates this whole cycle. So Mark did all men a discredit whenever this happened, and he's got to try to fix this, because this was an easy one.
Yeah, Mark also needs to realize that he'll never hear the end of that.
So. Yeah. This is 10 years down the line, Mark's going to hear about this story, so he's got to try to fix this one.
And why is it great to be a Muskie?
Like I said, recruiting's going great. Our guys are excited. They're back. They're working hard. We're heading out. You know, personally, me and Coach Tresky are heading down to Louisiana and to Texas next week for a recruiting trip. So we're going to go from single-digit weather to about 60-degree weather. So that's going to be great for us. But it's just an exciting time. We got so many guys that have committed, and other guys that I think are very close to committing to become part of our football family, and that's exciting. So we're building a lot of really good momentum here at Lakeland, and we're excited about where next year is going to take us, and excited with how our off season is going so far. So it's always great to be a Muskie, but especially this time of year.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us this month, Coach.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
We want to thank Coach Pruden for joining us on Muskies Matters this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Lakeland coach, please send them to us at ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsReport.com. That's ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsReport.com. Please have your questions to us by the first Wednesday of each month so we can give the coach a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Muskies Matters.